Hey, this is Molly Beck Ferguson from the Futio horror short Creep, and you are listening to A Little Dead Podcast, your place for full frontal nerdity.
Hey all, McPierce here. Welcome to episode 64 of A Little Dead Podcast, your place for full frontal nerdity when it comes to cheating husbands, annoying home alarm systems, and imaginary homicidal holiday creatures from our childhood. This week, I watched the collection of Futio short horror movies on the DVD Nightmare House Volume 1. a copy of which just so happens to be our August contest giveaway prize. Actually, the DVD and two t-shirts. I spent some time talking with Paul Hungerford from Feudio. He's one of the talented writers and actors involved in the production of these videos. We talk about how they come up with their video ideas, how far would be too far in a story, and more. Misfit Boy is going to get us in the zone this week with two episodes of The Twilight Zone. This week, he reviews People Are Alike All Over and A Nice Place to Visit. And I'm going to provide proof that Roy from the IT crowd had it right whenever he answers the phone. But first, I'm going to experiment with a new way of telling you the news in our news segment. First up, zombie news.
Zombie news!
The first piece of news I want to talk about is a little bit selfish on my part. Back when I interviewed Tom Berdinsky for the podcast, he and I were kicking around some ideas. You know, idle chit-chat. And one of the things we talked about was a zombie mafia podcast. So over the next week or two after that, I kept going over it and going over it and decided to do something with it. So anyway, I contacted Keith Latch, Corey Graham, and Tom and asked them, along with a few other guys, if they'd like to do a joint podcasting project. It's a thing I'm calling the Zombie Mob, or Il Zombo di Tutti Zombie, Zombie of All Zombies. And it's a group zombie movie review gig. Anybody can get a group of people together and review a zombie movie and submit it to the Zombie Mob. The review is then presented to the Zomfather, also called the Don of the Dead. When the episode gets posted, those people involved become made men and join the family. It's a zombie podcast you can't refuse. And you can get to it at thezombiemob.blogspot.com, and it's also available on iTunes. The Walking Dead trailer came out this week, and the big thing we learn is that the series premieres on Halloween. The whole trailer, which has more than the previous trailer, looks awesome. With the audio at normal levels and being able to actually see it clearly, this looks just great. But it's going to be a long time until the end of October. My friend Meg just finished reading Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, and I'm hoping I can talk her into doing a review of the book as well for the podcast. She pointed me to a blog where she found a cool graphic for the book and ended up reading some of their more recent posts. Lots of stuff there that fits in well with my interests. The website is toplessrobot.com, so go check them out. In horror news... Doug Bradley spoke up concerning whether or not he would reprise his role as Pinhead in the upcoming Hellraiser film, called Hellraiser Revelations. And his answer was, no, he would not be in the film. He didn't say whether someone else would step into his role, or if the character would be written out of the script. A little bit later in the week, a character sheet came out for the film. And in it, there's a character referred to as, quote, pseudo-Pinhead, and is described as a Cenobite who was so enamored with Pinhead that he mimics his appearance. Aww. Yeah, how lame. Conan, on our horror forums, posted a great set of photos for Corpse Bread. A baker made a loaf of bread in the shape of torsos, organs, limbs, and more that looked pretty damn real. In superhero news...
Superhero news!
If you remember back in episode 49, I mentioned a strange Filipino video I saw that had Batman, Joker, and Spider-Man in some weird bootleg movie. Well, this week I saw the trailer for another strange foreign superhero film. This one is called Hulka, and it's a Bangladesh version of The Incredible Hulk. It's a student film, not a Dollywood production, so you'll only find it online, if at all. Marvel Studios has hired Rich Wilks to write a screenplay for Iron Fist. Back in episode 48, I mentioned that rumor had it a movie was being developed for Iron Fist's partner, Luke Cage. So I hope this new piece of news means that both of these properties will make it onto the big screen. And to let you in on a little secret, I wore an Iron Fist costume for Halloween way back in the day, a costume I had made myself. I was a teenager at the time. I'll see if I can't find the pictures and post them online. In science fiction and fantasy news, Peter Jackson has said that the roadblocks stopping the Hobbit movie from being made are slowly being worked out, and he said that his plans will keep a lot of people busy for the next 5 years. I'm not sure what that means, but at least progress is being made. We have an interesting thing that came out on Sci-Fi's feed this week. Brannon Braga, one of the writers for the Star Trek franchise after Gene Roddenberry died, said in an interview that he had wanted to kill off Seven of Nine, the reformed Borg who traveled on USS Voyager in the Delta Quadrant. There was a failsafe chip in her head that prevented her from fully becoming human again, and Braga had wanted to use that as her swan song, having Seven sacrifice herself to get Voyager back to the Alpha Quadrant. Though I wonder how he would have done that. A memo dated April 13, 1987, listed actors being considered for the lead roles in Star Trek: The Next Generation, which included Wesley Snipes as a possible Geordi, Anne Toomey for Dr. Crusher, oh, and Gates McFadden is listed as Cheryl McFadden there. Rosalind Chow, who ultimately was Keiko O'Brien on both Next Gen and DS9, was being considered for the role of Tasha Yar. Brent Spiner wasn't listed as a candidate to play Data, but the late Kevin Peter Hall from Misfits of Science was up for both that role and also for the role of Geordi. No Will Wheaton, Denise Crosby was up for the part of Deanna Troi. You know, in the end, that just would have been a completely different series, huh? And finally, if you're in New York City between August 27th and September 6th, then you can check out The Return of William Castle. It's a film festival celebrating the body of work by the famous B-movie director who brought us such films as Mr. Sardonicus, which I reviewed back in episode 32. There's a schedule posted online of which films will be shown and when during the celebration. So what did you think of this week's news? Do you have some news you'd like to share? Then call me up on the Little Dead comment line at 206-338-0665 and let me know. And you can send it to me at alittledead@gmail.com as well. And speaking of listener feedback, here's what we have in the Little Dead mailbox.
To turn back the time machine a bit, to you, McPierce, what's up? Tremendal Mikey here. Yeah, obviously a lot of stuff I have to say is from episodes vastly far behind now. But you know what? Hey, I'm sort of like the slow bus of feedbackery and podcastery. You know what? I'm a lovable Metal Mikey again. Apparently your voicemail decided my first attempt wasn't good enough, so I'm going to try and rattle it off the second attempt. First off, to your general Lord of the Rings coverage. Not sure if you just left.
Apparently, Metal Mikey had some technical difficulties getting that voicemail through. I don't know what's happening, but hey, Mikey, give us a call back, man. I want to say a big shout-out to Shannon from Seattle Geekly Podcast. On Wednesday night, I posted on Twitter that I was going to be on Xbox Live and wanted to know if anyone was up for a game of Left 4 Dead 2. And Shannon was available, and we had a great time chatting and getting killed by zombies in Dead Carnival. So much so that I'd love to get something together on a more frequent basis. Now, I've got school and all, but I'd still love to set aside a night each week to meet up with people and get some gaming going. So if you're up for it, why not drop a note on the forums or on the Little Dead comment line? Let's see if we can't get enough people together for a few decent games of Versus or Survival. I'll be the one with the shotgun waiting next to the sweet stock car in the mall.
Hey, Gord.
Yeah, Steve?
I'm bored.
Me too. What do you want to do?
I know, let's host a film festival.
What are you, high or only seven?
35 years in the making. It's the Boneback Comedy of Horrors Film Festival. Thursday, September 2nd at the Big Picture Theater in Redmond, Washington. Two features, tons of shorts, and live music from Seattle's own Barefoot Barnacle. Hosted by Stephen Gord of The Bone Bat Show. The festival is sponsored by Mac and Jack's Brewery, Flying Saucer Pizza, Scarecrow Video, Comic Stop, Games and Gizmos, GT Printing Equipment, Stalker Farms, Field of Screams, and Indie Flicks. Tickets are $24 in advance or $28 after August 13th. The Big Picture is a 21 and over theater. Go to www.bonehand.com to get your tickets today.
This is going to be huge, just like my wiener.
Totally, but dude, you know what really pisses me off?
The Bone Bat Comedy of Horrors Film Festival. You get the whole seat, but you'll only need the edge.
Traveling through another dimension. A dimension not only of sight and sound, but of mind. A journey into a wondrous land whose boundaries are that of imagination. Your next stop, the Twilight Zone.
Hey everyone, welcome to another installment of Get in the Zone. I'm your host, Misfit Boy, and I'll be taking you into the fifth dimension once again. This week, we find that if people are alike all over, and then, what if every wish you asked for came true? Would it make you happy? Or would you just get flat-out bored? Well, we're about to find out from two individuals this time around. So, put on your pressure suits, I'll check the airlocks, as we set course to the deep, dark depths of the Twilight Zone. But first, a word from the captain of Creepy himself, Mr. Rod Serling.
You're looking at a species of flimsy little two-legged animal with extremely small heads, whose name is Man. Warren Markison. Age 35. Samuel A. Conrad, age 31.
Hey, let's get ready, Sam. We've only got a couple of hours.
They're taking a highway into space. Man unshackling himself and sending his tiny groping fingers up into the unknown. Their destination is Mars. And in just a moment, we'll land there with them.
This episode is entitled People Are Alike All Over, and it's about two men, Conrad and Markison, two astronauts preparing to take off from Earth. Conrad, played by Roddy McDowall, is petrified about going into space. He's a biologist who is not too happy about traveling millions of miles into space to find new life forms. Markison, on the other hand, keeps telling him, "Don't worry, people are the same everywhere." I guess Markison's never been on Twitter before. Anyway, after takeoff, something goes wrong with the controls and they crash land on an unknown planet millions of miles from Earth. Conrad awakens to find Markison in poor shape. Quickly injecting him with adrenaline, he wakes up only to give him some grim news that he's bleeding inside and wants to go outside to see what he's going to die for. Now, the problem is, Conrad does not wish to open the door due to the fact that he's been hearing tapping outside the door, and he's almost paralyzed with fear. Soon, Markison succumbs to the internal bleeding and dies. Now, Conrad has no choice but to venture outside. As soon as the door opens, he's greeted by aliens that just look just like people. To Conrad's amazement, he's thrilled he's not alone. They offer to give him a place to stay while they fix his ship. He even meets a beautiful woman named Tinya, who's troubled about the fact that he's there. Now, the aliens take Conrad to a place that looks like a room that came out of a Norman Rockwell painting. Even has a fireplace, TV set. The home he's been in is designed from his mind, and it's an exact replica of his home on Earth. The aliens then ask Conrad if he'd be willing to stay for a while, and in return, he would get a tour of how the aliens live and visit their cities. He agrees. While he's having a drink in his new home, he comes to find that all the doors are locked. He tries to open the curtains, but unfortunately, behind them is a wall. No windows, no open doors. Conrad begins to panic as a wall starts to open, revealing the aliens staring at him, speaking among themselves. Now, a barred cage is set in front of him, rendering him trapped. As he looks down, a sign is posted in front of the cage, which reads, "Earth creature in his native habitat." Tina can no longer watch as Conrad is nothing more than a caged animal, and she leaves. Conrad screams to Markison that he was right. People are alike all over.
Species of animal brought back alive. Interesting similarity in physical characteristics to human beings. In head, trunk, arms, legs, hands, feet. Very tiny, undeveloped brain. Comes from primitive planet named Earth. Calls himself Samuel Conrad. And he will remain here in his cage with the running water and the electricity and the central heat as long as he lives. Samuel Conrad has found the Twilight Zone.
Listen. Do you hear it? It's getting closer. Much closer. Don't be afraid. Be very, very afraid.
Gray, take a journey with me through the dark side of cinema in the Dark Hours Horror Podcast. Find it at thedarkhours.net.
Terror has no shape.
It's far beyond anything your mind could ever conceive.
A scared, angry little man. He thinks it's all over now, but he's wrong. For Rocky Valentine, it's just the beginning.
This episode is entitled A Nice Place to Visit, and it revolves around a man named Rocky Valentine, who's a small-time crook on a job robbing a small business called the Southside Loan Company. Sirens can be heard as Rocky grabs his stash and heads for the door, only to be shot by police. When Rocky awakens, a man stands before him dressed in white, calling himself Pip. He tells Rocky he's going to be his guide, and furthermore, he will give him anything he wants. Rocky pulls a gun on Pip and tells him to give up his wallet. Pip tells him if it's money you want, no problem, then proceeds to pull $700 cash out of his pocket. Pip asks Rocky to follow him, and Rocky does, pistol aimed at Pip's back, of course. They enter a lavish apartment, fit for a prince. "Whose pad is this?" Rocky asks. "Why, it's yours, Mr. Valentine," Pip informs him. Pip gets him a new suit and even dinner. Rocky tells Pip to eat it first, in case it's poison. When Pip refuses, Rocky shoots him and nothing happens. Rocky thinks he has a bulletproof vest on and aims for the head. Nothing again. Pip finally informs him of his predicament. "Remember when I told you I was your guide, and you told me you need a guide like a hole in the head? Well, short time before that, you had a hole in your head. Compliments to the police. So I must have died and gone to heaven. This is big." Soon, everything he asks for appears. He starts to refer to Pip as Fats. Now, everything he has ever wanted is right at his fingertips. Rocky goes gambling and wins every time. He has women all around him. He's living the good life. But Rocky can't understand what he did to deserve such a good afterlife. So he asks Fats to take him to the Hall of Records. As Rocky fingers through the files of his life, he can't find anything that he could think of that would give him into heaven. After a month of winning at craps, slots, and every other game he tries, Rocky starts to get bored. He asks Fats about robbing a bank, but everything will work out the way Rocky wants it. Not impressed, Rocky begins to get angry and finally tells Fats that he's sick and tired of being in heaven, and he wants to go to the other place. Fats looks at him and laughs, as Rocky tries to open a door, but it's locked. "Who said this was heaven in the first place, Mr. Valentine?" And laughs at Rocky, reassuring him that he is, in fact, in the other place and forever will remain. Well, that's it for this week. See you next time. as we once again get in the zone. This is Misfit Boy, and I'm in the zone.
A scared, angry little man who never got a break. Now he has everything he's ever wanted, and he's going to have to live with it for eternity in the Twilight Zone.
I'm Roy. IT.
Since my oldest son finished up at his middle school, which was right down the road from my office, I've had the opportunity to work from home for most of the week. And I've been taking full advantage of it, getting up and working over coffee, not getting showered until late in the morning, and especially saving a ton on gas by not having to drive all the way into Raleigh every day. I've been working with a guy named Adam who lives not far from me, so we tend to meet up at the Borders here in town and work together in the coffee shop for a few hours each week. But there's been a huge pain in the ass there when, every so often, my laptop would get disconnected from the internet. I'd check and see that there was an IP address assigned to it, but it would not get to any internet sites on our work VPN. And I'd end up having to go home to finish out my workday at that point, since I'd never get back online at Borders. So this week, when it happened to me, I was getting ready to pack up and leave when one of the employees at Borders walked by. I asked him if anybody there knew what the problem was, and he said he wasn't technical and had no idea what to do. Well, a few minutes later, another employee came over and we talked about the symptoms I was seeing on my laptop. We saw that, yeah, I'm getting an IP address via DHCP, but that I couldn't even ping the router, and that was why I wasn't able to get out on the net. Basically, their router wasn't accepting any network traffic from my laptop. So anyway, I asked them what kind of equipment they had, and the guy, named Brandon, said he'd show me their setup and I could see if I could, you know, locate the problem. So we go into the back room where their Wi-Fi router was located. I looked at it and suggested he unplug the power cable, wait 10 seconds, then plug it in again. Because what he had been turning off was the switch, not the router. As soon as he did what I said, we went back out to the table where Adam and my laptop were sitting, and yep, it was back online and working. Their Wi-Fi router needed to be reset since, for whatever reason, it was getting into a bad state and blocking traffic. So what's the moral of this story? Simple. Before calling tech support or giving up, just ask yourself what Roy from the IT crowd asks everybody whenever they call IT for help.
Hello, IT. Have you tried turning it off and on again? Oh, okay, well, the button on the side, is it glowing? Yeah, you need to turn it on. The button turns it on.
They're coming to get you, Barbara. They're coming for you, Barbara. They're coming for you. Look!
Welcome to a DVD of Total Terror, Knights of the Living Dead, reanimated. Over 100 artists, over 100 styles, over 2 hours of bonus footage and extras, reimagining George Romero's zombie classic, Knights of the Living Dead, reanimated.
It has been established that persons who have recently died have been returning to life and committing acts of murder. In all cases, the killers are eating flesh.
Night of the Living Dead, reanimated. Art is dead. It's all messed up.
What's happening?
Everything will be all right.
Yeah, they're dead. They're all messed up.
Thank you.
Nightmare House Volume 1 is a collection of 13 short horror films from Fudio, the people who create nightmares. The videos star various members of Fudio, as well as having been written, produced, and directed by the same. The DVD itself is not listed in IMDb, so I can't find a rating for it. So instead, I'll do individual ratings for my favorites. Of the 13 videos, my personal favorites are Anniversary, The Easter Bunny, Breach, and Creep. Creep was produced in 2008 and was written by Drew Daywall and directed by him and Dave Schneider. It stars Molly Beck Ferguson and Paul Hungerford. The short horror is about a woman driving home from hospital while talking to a friend on her cell phone. And IMDb gives it 6.5 out of 10 stars, based on 10 votes as of today. This film was a big gut punch for me. There was a time back in 2002 when I was working in Reston, Virginia, and would have to drive 4 hours each way from Central North Carolina to the apartment I was subletting up there. And the majority of that drive was down 85 in Southern Virginia, which has no lights and was surrounded by woods and was pitch black and scary when I was driving at 2 in the morning. And I would talk to my wife for periods of time until my cell phone coverage would go out. So watching someone else in that situation and knowing that something horrible was going to happen to them just heightened the suspense. The Easter Bunny was written by Drew Daywall and directed by him and Dave Schneider as well, and stars Abigail Daywalt and Marichal Daywalt. It is a short film about a little girl who can't get her parents to wake up enough to take her seriously, and touches on the horror a parent feels about their children being exposed to dangers that the adults don't see. Anniversary was written by Drew Daywall and John Cry, and stars Azura Parson and Donnie Jeffcoat, and is a wonderful tale about celebrating a moment in your life with someone else every year. Though actually, not every celebration is a happy occasion, and really not every event is one that people want to remember. And the changes they make in your life aren't always for the better, nor do they always leave you a better person. Breach was written and directed by Kirk B.R. Waller and stars Timothy Thomas Brown and the voice of Mary Thornton. IMDb gives it 6.9 out of 10 stars based on 10 votes. It's a story about technology and how it sometimes doesn't quite help as much as it should, and how it can sometimes work against us when it goes wrong, making us let our guard down at just the wrong time. But don't let the fact that I only reviewed a few of the films give you the wrong impression. The whole collection is excellent. And on our buy it, borrow it, or don't bother scale, I rate Nightmare House Volume 1 a definite buy. It's a collection of well-done, frightening, and visceral horror films that will scare the b- out of you.
Visit www.thefearinside.com, where you'll find written reviews, video reviews, horror podcasts, and the science of zombies.
If this one doesn't scare you, you're already dead.
Find your fear at www.thefearinside.com.
Hey all, McPierce here, and I have with me Paul Hungerford from Fudio. Hello, Paul.
Hey. Hi, everybody.
So Paul was kind enough to give to us the prize for, or the contest prize for this month, the DVD of Nightmare House Volume 1 and 2 t-shirts size large. And we're going to talk a little bit about the DVD Nightmare House Volume 1. So I'll say how I came across it. I think it was about a year and a half ago, maybe a little longer. Somebody started following me on Twitter named Drew Daywalt. So I followed him back. I took a look at the link on his Twitter feed, or I'm sorry, on his Twitter homepage, and it was a link back to Fudio.com.
And the first thing I clicked on, so I went there, I saw a link for a DVD called Nightmare House Volume 1. I went and took a look, and I played a video called The Easter Bunny is Eating My Candy. And I fell in love. That was the most awesome video I had seen to date.
Yeah, that's actually one of the first ones we actually put out. Easter Bunny is Eating My Candy. We decided, it was one of the first films we'd finished. We had about 3 or 4 in the can, and Easter was rolling around, and we had this great idea of let's drop it on the web and see what happens. And it was fantastic. The reaction was great. Within 3 or 4 days, people were like, what the heck is this? What is going on? This is really freaking me out. My kid watched this. Who are you people? Why are you destroying my family values? It was awesome.
It was, yeah, I have to say, it was absolutely awesome because the imagery, the Easter Bunny's language, just everything about it just was so primal.
Yeah.
You know, just
John Cry, who is one of the members of Fudio, he wrote this, like, demonic language, and we decided to throw it in. We like to play with languages and stuff. A film I did called Door 17, there was all this English-American dialogue, and I was it's kind of a tip of my hat to Hostel. In that I really like the idea of using a different language to make the viewer feel a little uncomfortable, like, what's going on? I don't understand what's going on, but you can emotionally connect to the character, which I really like.
Yeah, you knock the viewer out of their comfort zone by making them a part of, you know, that whole alienation, that whole sense of being, you know, out of sorts or, you know, completely vulnerable.
Absolutely. I think that's really fun. I think the media, of course, you know, film does that to you. It's a big wide field of vision, and there's lots of senses you can take advantage of. Sight, sound, you know, tapping into the raw emotions that are going on. Yeah. Thank you. We're really proud of that one.
Well, that's a great one. Now tell me a little bit about Fudio. What is Fudio?
Fudio is basically a collective of filmmakers. We are all industry professionals who kind of stopped gaming on weekends and started making films on weekends. And the whole process was to say, you know, let's not wait for somebody to give us permission to go and do what we love to do. Let's just go and do what we love to do. Mm-hmm. We have the technology, we have the talent, we have the knowledge, so what's stopping us, you know? With the invention of digital technology, everything, all the tools are at your fingertips. You know, we made one of an earlier film before Fudio, a short film I was involved with called Hate, a Comedy, about a chicken that's trying to kill me. We shot that whole movie in 35mm anamorphic lens, and it was a big undertaking. It was a huge shoot, but so because we were using film, we were using short ends, which is the film left over in from the film mag being used. Mm-hmm. And provided its own challenges. But so film has a lot of process that goes into it, not only the processing of the film, but a lot that goes in around it. And technology today with SLRs and with 3-chip cameras and a lot of even the analog stuff, which is what we shoot most of Fudio stuff on, you can get great texture and great feel for your story, you know, and I think that's available to people now, and we decided to take advantage of that. So that's kind of how it started. That's kind of the very beginning. Curse was the first film we did, and we had major sound issues with it, so it kind of ended up getting put on hold as we kind of regrouped and kind of, you know, trying to figure out what the heck we were doing, because we all still had jobs. We still had responsibilities to take care of.
Right.
So then eventually we came back around to it when the writer's strike happened. And so that gave us a lot of opportunity.
Mm-hmm. So let me ask you this. So where do you get the ideas? So you've got the talent, you've got the technology, but the key ingredient and the thing that I think really, at least for me, what really I love about it are these ideas. So like with Easter Bunny, you've got that fundamental fear of – or that fundamental feeling of a child who's vulnerable and whose parents don't see the danger near the child.
Yeah.
Where do you get these ideas? I mean, do you guys, like, sit down and start thinking about, hey, I had this really bad dream when I was 4 years old where X happened, and then kind of riff on it?
Well, it's not too far from really from the whole thing. We don't necessarily sit down and kind of have a head to head about it. But, you know, yes, if you know, you have a thought. One of the things we were all talking about when we did have kind of a writer's meeting, it wasn't really official. It was just us sitting around eating and drinking beer. Mm-hmm. And it was like, well, what is scary? What's primal to you? What is your truest fear? What really frightens you? And a story that came out of that was Kirk Wohler's Breach, in which we meet a character at home alone, and he's getting the sound of his alarm system keeps telling him that someone's come in the house, and he's walking around the house. Where's the thing? I can't find it. He's walking around trying to find it. And it's those kind of simple primal things like, someone's come into my house and I don't know it, or something's missing, or you know, your world is disturbed from your false sense of security.
Right.
I think one of the most terrifying things to me that I haven't really tapped into yet for a story, because I did write a story that never really kind of got completed, where it's like a home invasion story, mm-hmm. but from the point of view of Goldilocks and the Three Bears, where Goldilocks had basically done a home invasion on the Three Bears, and a kind of twist on that. I never really followed it all the way through, but that was one of the things that scared the Jesus out of me, was the idea of someone coming into my home forcefully. That really was frightening to me. Right. And that's where these come from. You know, everybody, or something pops into someone's head, and you know, David Schneider will give me a call and say, hey, I had a thought about this. What do you think? And I'm like, you know, I like it. You know, here's some suggestions. Here's some ideas. Go write it and come back. And that's really how the process happened, is somebody kind of comes up with something, or something affects them. Mm-hmm. And that kind of is the germ that sets off the story. And then we quickly try to get it on paper. One of the things we try to promote in the group is, don't think, write. Just get it out. Throw it up on the page. Finish it. And that's a lot of problems that people have, especially when you're starting out writing, especially for me, was I never finished anything. Everything was like two or three pages in. I was like, I don't like it anymore. and it's not where I wanted to go. And it's like you just kind of – and all of a sudden it just dies, just sits there. The thing that helped me was, and especially in Fudio, was just get it out. It's only three or four pages, maybe five pages. Just get the story written. And then you can go back and kind of start saying, oh, well, wait a minute, I don't need that. I want this to happen. Or I kind of came off track here. Yeah.
You think about it after the fact. You don't try and second guess it up front.
Absolutely.
You may think too much about, you know, the horror involved, or you may be thinking too much about trying to evoke a particular emotion rather than letting that emotion get derived from the story. You know?
Absolutely. And I think a person who affected my writing a lot was Stephen King. I don't know if you ever read Stephen King on writing.
Oh, well, not that particular book, but I have read a lot of his writings.
Yeah, I love the way he describes the writing. As the story is kind of going, and he's writing and telling the story. It's kind of coming through him, and sometimes the story just stops.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, oh, all right, well, I guess that's where that one ended. That really worked for me because I no longer felt like I was trying to control it. I just wanted the story to kind of take on its own, you know, life and let it lead me. And I was just telling it. I wasn't mm-hmm. controlling it. And I think that sometimes, you know, because I do a lot of comedy as well, I don't think you can force the scare or the joke in. It just kind of, sometimes it just kind of happens. And those are the best moments.
I don't know. See, I want to say that there was at least one screamer video on the DVD that, that did get me.
Do that. Breach?
Yes.
Yeah.
I was not so here's how I watched the DVD. I sat down and I watched like two or three segments in the morning when I get up and have my coffee. So Breach is not the first one. I think it's the second or third story on the DVD. It was the last one that I watched that first morning when I got up. Oh, by the way, Anniversary, I played that one for my wife. She's not a big horror fan. Yeah. But when it got to the end of that, she just looked at me and said, yeah, don't forget it.
Yeah. It's such a great female story. Marisol did such a great job directing that. It's, mm-hmm. It's such a feminine story.
We are having technical difficulties. Please stand by.
I think it's a very feminine point of view film in that for me, one of the great moments is after the character has kind of, she's making some sort of concoction, whatever you want to label it as, and when she sits down in front of her dresser, she places the cup of on her windowsill, and a breeze hits, and there's a soft moment, and the music changes, and the whole tone of the film suddenly kind of shifts, and as she's getting ready, I love the details and the specifics that are going on. Azure Parsons is who's playing the woman, mm-hmm. and she just takes her time putting on lipstick, making sure her dress is on, making sure everything's right. It's such a woman's point of view, and I really love that about it because it lulls you into this false sense of safe, everything's fine, don't worry. Oh, my God, she's using a knife!
You come into it thinking that she's celebrating an anniversary, and no, she's not really celebrating anything in particular. I'm sorry, she's not celebrating. She's more reminding herself or reminding somebody else, somebody who you would think would be beyond the need of the need to be reminded.
Exactly. It's such a great twist on a revenge story. Mm-hmm. I just love it. I love it.
Yeah, and I think anniversary, like, you know, or the Easter Bunny's eating my candy. Those are good examples of what Fudio has brought to me, at least. You're taking a simple story, or you're taking what the user is expecting, and at some point you're just turning it around and going, you're not going where this story's not going where you thought it was going.
Right.
It's going someplace else, and it's someplace that's horrible.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah, good. Yeah, well, good. Then we're doing our job.
But now let me ask you this. So there's really great stories. Has there been any story that was just so horrible you went, or somebody went, no, there's absolutely no way we're doing that. That's just bad.
Well, it's funny because, yes, there is one story that I had written. We're working on a web series right now called Cursiter, and we're in the writing phase of it. And we're working on different characters for the stories and everything, and I was struck by the muse, and I cranked out this character who turns out to be, and we're not doing it. Let me just, this is how horrible it was. Everybody turned against me with this story. The idea that an abortion clinic doctor is using his skill set to give blood sacrifice to raise demonic purpose.
You don't want to demonize somebody that's already been too demonized.
Everybody was like, it's not happening. I was like, no, but it's really, no, it's not happening. Yeah, but there should be no secret. Nope, it's not happening. I was like, okay, I guess we're not doing that. So, that was probably the most, but because it touched on so many hot points. I mean, it's such a horrific thing. And then on top of that, you're dealing with a political issue. And then you're dealing with, you're setting it up in such an evil way. And someone who's already demonized, like you said. So, yeah, it just didn't happen. But no, nothing has really been,
Let me ask you this. Is that a point where you could at least step back and go, okay, fine, not a Planned Parenthood doctor. Adolf Hitler is taking babies. If at that point you think people would go, oh, okay, well, that's fine.
Right. I think, zombies are the new Nazis. Like, you can make Nazis do anything evil when they're, it was really like in the 70s and 80s, it was those Nazi guys. You just made them the bad guy, and that was it. Now it's zombies. You can make a zombie, they're the perfect fodder for whatever you want is mass evil.
Right. That's actually been a topic, the reverse of that, on the comic book updates. So Ashcrow and I have noticed that in a lot of comics that we've read, writers are using Nazis as, we need something that everybody can agree that's evil. So they just, like Tom Strong and the Robots of Doom, bad guys are Nazis. You go back in time, Nazis won World War II. That sets, that's the setting for the story that I'm reading now in that series. And, it's a case of you need something to be the ultimate evil there, and Nazi is just the perfect one because there's very few people that will be taken seriously who would look at that and go, but they were just misunderstood.
Yeah. there's so many. That's such a great that topic alone. The whole Nazi point of view and everything from Inglourious Basterds to what is it? The Bunker. I mean, there's so much. There's so much room for story in there. It's such a though horrific period. It has so much fodder for story, or so many, so ripe for story to tell about it.
Yeah, it's very fertile. We just did a zombie mob episode last week where we talked about Zombie Lake, which is, you know, the classic 1981 horrible zombie Nazi movie.
Right, right.
Which I still say is a World War II docudrama with zombies in it. Just a bad one. It was very factually incorrect.
That's brilliant.
Well, I'll tell you what. I've got a list of names here of people who really are wanting to see this DVD, and I can tell you, I can tell them they want it. And for anybody who doesn't win, go and buy it. It's a reasonable price, and it's got a lot to it. The videos are just incredibly awesome.
Thanks. I mean, you know, the other thing to think about is, sorry, I'm going to give you my pitch and my plug. It, you know, we're just a bunch of guys making movies. We're not funded by anyone but ourselves. This is what we do, and this is how we try to recoup some of the revenue. You can, you know, if the DVD is not your thing, check out our website. You know, check us out on Facebook or follow some of us on Twitter. You know, that's a great way to support us as well.
Although the financial doesn't hurt either.
It does not. It does not hurt at all, actually. We really appreciate it. That's the thing. Is you know, that's why we went to Comic-Con for the last 2 years. That's why we're always going to different events and meeting people, because it's about connecting with the fans. It's about making, you know, writing good stories and telling good stories, should I say, and making good movies, because we'd like to do more, and we can do more. It's just, we can do more, obviously, with financial support, but that's not what we expect from everyone. So we want to give, you know, it's a back and forth thing. You buy our DVD, you get movie entertainment. We get to take that huge sum of money that you just gave us and go try and make something. Because it's probably the cost, like, I think half the time it's like the cost of our films is like two or three DVDs. So.
Right. Well, you know, and it's a great business model. I don't want to, like, bore people talking about how to make money, you know, on the Internet. But seriously, it's a great way to go about it. And I've spoken with other producers who have done the same approach. They put the media out there for free for, you know, people to go and watch. You want to see the videos. There's Futio stuff on YouTube. There's stuff up on a Little Dead on the Little Dead forums at Multiply.com, Futio.com. But if they want to see more, they need to support the artist. They need to go and buy the DVD or do something, you know, do something in order to feed back into it. It's like, my big thing is I'm an open source developer. I write software for free for people to use. And I, you know, put my time and my effort into bug fixes and all that.
Right.
And the way we, like, thrive in that, I'm doing air quotes now, economy, is people who like what we're doing, if they want new features, they submit the features, you know, they'll submit patches for the code back to us to include in the project, and then everybody gets involved that way. And,
and
it's the same deal with Nightmare House and with, you know, Night of the Living Dead Reanimated and so on.
Oh, Peter's great. Peter Gutierrez is a big supporter of Gideon, that he's just the best. Night of the Living Dead Reanimated was, that's a trippy little film. I enjoyed it. Yeah, I do think being a fan helps of that movie, but Peter's great.
And speaking of fans, I have a list of a few dozen people who would like to, who showed enough interest that they shot me an email to say that they wanted in the Nightmare House Volume 1 giveaway contest. So I'm going to fire up the Little Dead prize machine here, and let's see who won the prize. Our first winner is a Mr. Aaron Skullwalker.
Great name. Well done, Aaron.
I think he might be Italian.
Even better.
I may be wrong.
And in the Skullwalker.
And our he's from the very, if I'm not mistaken, he's from very, 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 very western Italy near Detroit. And our second winner is Jeff Rigo.
Well done, Jeff. Outstanding work.
Yeah, so both of you guys. So I'm sorry, I should have said it in order. Aaron Skullwalker is our winner. He got the T-shirt and the DVD. Jeff Rigo is our runner-up. He got a T-shirt.
Yay.
So, gentlemen, if you can both send me your mailing address to alittledead@gmail.com, I will get your T-shirts and the DVD out in the mail this week.
Awesome.
Cool. So congratulations, guys. Now, Paul, I've got one more question for you.
Please.
Now, this is a very important one. Very important.
I will not tell you what Futio means.
Oh. Okay, well, instead of that, then, when's Volume 2 going to come out?
When is Volume 2 coming out? That's a great question. You know, because we're talking about the DVDs, we did the movies that are on the web are different in the sense of we made the movies for the DVDs so that you could watch them on the big screen. We mm-hmm. played with sound. We played with, format. We did a lot of different things on the DVD for your television screen. So because of that, and because we took such a large break in the middle of our season last year, we're hoping to have it out next year at Comic-Con, because right now we have three things on the schedule. We have Claustrophobia, which is a film we're producing. Mm-hmm. We have a web series that we're presently writing that should shoot in about, well, I don't know, I'm not going to jinx it. Should be shooting in a few months. And then we finish that. And then we can start focusing on what's going on the DVD. Now, in the meantime, basically what's happening is we're in production on the DVD, making short films, putting them on the web, getting them through post-production, you know, doing all of that process. So there's a lot on the plate and a lot of plates in the air. There's a lot on the plate and there's a lot of plates in the air. So we're constantly trying to balance all that. And trying to balance it financially, because everything we do is going to come, well, not everything, but most of what we do is going to have to come from out of pocket.
Right.
So trying to balance that is difficult. We produce the DVD, so all that came from us. So it's trying to assess what we want to do with Volume 2, what films we want to put on there, how many films are we going to create over the next 6 months that, you know, will be on there, and so on and so forth. So I know this, we've got two new films up that have been up in the last couple months, and then we just released First, which is the winner from the Talent House contest that we did last year. Mm-hmm. And then we have two more films that are, in the can. One is my film called Farmer's Daughter Redux, and and then we have another film that's called In the Dark, but that's kind of a mini movie, what we like to call our mini movies, like a 1 minute, 2 minute film. Mm-hmm. And that one's kind of teetering on the abyss. So we don't know if that's actually going to succeed or not, because we had some major erasage issues. So we're seeing if we can succeed at that or not. So, but that doesn't, you know, once we finish those two, what we do is like three films. It's like we shoot. They go into post-production, we go off and do other things, make sure we're taking care of other things, and then while those are finishing up in post-production, once those three films are done, we go, okay, great, three films done, back to post-production, and we kind of keep rotating and keep rotating. So Volume 2, in a perfect world, to answer your question finally, Comic-Con 2011.
Nice. I am looking forward to that. So that's 10 months on a good day.
Yeah, and if all goes well and according to plan, so cross your fingers.
Yeah, because I did see in the teaser for Volume 2 that my favorite, the video that I love of everything, Bedfellows, is going to be on Volume 2.
Unfortunately, Bedfellows won't be.
Oh.
I know, I'm sorry.
When's Volume 3 coming out? Oh, that's too bad. Bedfellows is available online, so people can go check it out online. That video, you know, like I said, the Easter Bunny's eating my candy. Loved that at the beginning. But Bedfellows, that one was really just, that was a gut punch, because that very last shot, the very ending, sealed the deal on me. I fell in love with that video. That is just awesomely visceral.
Yeah, it's funny because so much about what Studio is about is about, the filmmaking. It's about finding those little things that you can, you know. Like for me, a big effect on my, you know, why I went into film was Sam Raimi.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a Spielberg kid. I grew up with Spielbergs and George Lucas and all those, you know, all those films back in the day, like we all did.
Right.
And Sam Raimi, I saw Sam Raimi's The Evil Dead, probably way younger than I should have. It blew the back of my head off. I was like, that's it. This is what I want to do. I know what I want to do forever and ever and ever. And there are so many moments that I absolutely love in both, you know, one and two, which are, you know, it's like the first one is so raw and terrifying. And the second one is such a great remake in a way, but a different version in a way. It's like, it's so amazing. But there's so many little tiny things that he does that I'm constantly, you know, and that's kind of what Studio is too, is we're using this short form content to help improve our filmmaking. So as we go along and as we make more films, we can get better and better at it, strengthen all those different muscles and tell good stories using the media that way. And that's what Fudio is all about, is about telling good stories. So.
And I'll tell you what, Paul, you guys are really living up to that goal. You tell great stories. You really talk to the audience with them.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I appreciate it, man. And well, you too. You keep up the great work too. I love A Little Dead Podcast.
Thank you.
I have it locked in. I love it. You guys do a great job too. I have a great time listening.
Well, that's cool. And again, I am so glad to have you on the show. Thank you for contributing to this month's prizes. Aaron and Jeff, again, here's a call out. Send me your addresses so I can get you your prizes out there. Paul, I want to thank you so much for being on the show this week.
Oh, my pleasure. Anytime. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
How often does this happen to you?
What do you mean it's my turn? They just got to the good part.
Or this.
I've got about 5 minutes to kill. Not enough time to read a book.
Or this.
Honey, can you give me something to read? I'm going to be a few minutes, if you know what I mean.
Do you like your media bite-sized with vicious pointy teeth bites? Try Angry Gnome Comics Short Stack Series. Each issue presents 13 juicy ultra-short stories you can really sink your teeth into. Angry Gnome Comics are available at www.angrygnomecomics.com. This is your announcer speaking.
Honey, could you, jam me a beer?
Well, that's our show for this week. I hope you enjoyed the reviews as much as I enjoyed watching the short movies. Nightmare House Volume 1 is an absolutely awesome collection of horror films, ones that any horror buff can enjoy. The people at Fudio are an extremely talented bunch, and I really cannot wait to see what comes out with Volume 2. And remember, you can also check out their videos on their website at Fudio.com, and you can order a copy of the DVD and help support their efforts, and also get a t-shirt. A big shout out to Paul Hungerford for joining me this week. I had a great time chatting with him and could have easily gone on for another hour with him. Look for more from Paul in future, since he's a big comic book fan and is going to join us on the Comic Book Update sometime, and also on The Zombie Mob. And don't forget to also check out The Zombie Mob at thezombiemob.blogspot.com. Another big shout out goes to my buddy Misfit Boy for getting us in the zone this week. Awesome reviews, man. And thanks to Metal Mikey for calling into the podcast. If you're not already doing so, then you should be listening to his podcast, Action Attraction, now. Great show and a great host. And he's joined by Zombie Farmer on a regular basis, whom I absolutely love. Join me next week when I'll take us on a culinary tour of murder and mayhem with 2005's The Ginger Dead Man, starring Gary Busey. He's crazy and homicidal, and the character in the movie's not all that with it either. And I'm also going to be talking with some open source enthusiasts who use open source software and Creative Commons licensing to produce movies, comics, and books. So with that, I'm out of here. Until next week, this is your friend McPierce saying, later. You've been listening to A Little Dead Podcast. You can email comments to us at alittledead@gmail.com. Or you can call them in on the Little Dead comment line at 206-338-0665. You can download the show from iTunes or from our website at alittledead.com. You can stream the podcast on your smartphone using the iPhone and BlackBerry app from Stitcher.com. And you can follow me on Twitter. My screen name is McPierce. You can join our Facebook group and be sure to check out our forums at alittledead.multiply.com.
Hey, Gordy, give me a shot!
Bleorg.
Join me next week when I'll...